In the latter half of the 20th century, Japan was suffering the worst economic depression in the post-war era. Numerous chain reaction bankruptcies, increasing rates of unemployment, unbelievably heinous crimes committed by youths. It was a place and era that was suitably described by the phrase, the end of the century.
Here we're sitting here with our friend, the Angry Otaku.
Hello, everybody.
And we've had him on the show before with far inferior sound quality, I believe. But now we have the levelator and better mics.
It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
It's true. And the economy was totally different. That was when things were still sort of still jumping.
Still bumping. Yeah,
I was still in a situation where I was reluctant to talk about things.
Yeah, I don't remember if you...
I am no longer reluctant to talk about.
Yeah, I don't remember if you went into the details of like the show that you tried to produce or not. But that's an interesting story. Maybe not for this time. Maybe for another time. We'll see. But lately you've been in business school in Japan?
Yes. I've been at Hitotsubashi University in Tokyo getting an MBA. And this is the first time in, I guess, 20 months I've been back in New York. I'm only back for 3 days.
Oh, and, 3 days? Really? I thought you were here...
No, 3 days from now.
Oh.
I've already
okay.
been here 2 days.
Right. Mm. All right.
In the week that's like the longest break you've had or whatever?
Yeah, the longest break we get in this school is...
Yeah, what's your schedule like?
There's class every day from about 8:30 in the morning all the way until 6. And then, of course, we have our nomikais, and we have our study groups, and we have our Saturday sessions, and we have our field studies. And so it's called the International Corporate Strategy Program. It says ICS, but it really stands for I Can't Sleep.
Oh.
So,
or you'll fail.
Yeah, or you fail.
But then you're used to the Japanese never-sleeping morning person lifestyle.
Yeah, you learn how those energy drinks work really quick.
Which is the best one?
Min Min Daha.
That's what I should have opened up with. What's your favorite energy drink?
It has a giant pair of bloodshot eyes bursting out of this label. You have to, with the energy drinks, the smaller the bottle, the more potent.
Are they expensive? Like,
yeah, it's like $5.
Damn.
And it tastes like melted coffee ice cream.
And how long does it... Oh, that's not so bad. How long does it keep you awake?
If you're reaching the wall, it'll pump another maybe 12, 16 hours in you.
Shit.
And when that's over, you're going to die.
Mm. Oh.
So just time it right. And whatever you do, don't take a second one.
It doesn't work.
It'll work.
Oh, it'll work,
but by halfway through, you're going to be seeing things that isn't there.
Yeah.
No, like Fight Club. Yeah. Kind of, yikes.
You see vapor trails as people pass you. It's not a pleasant place to be. Also because like you are awake, but the quality of your work is not necessarily great. Because you haven't been awake so long, you are distracted. You're going to leave stuff undone. You're not going to notice an error, you know, and you might do something too fast. So, but they do come in handy. I'm only allowed to have those. My wife says I'm only allowed to have those during finals week, and never again.
It's probably a good policy. Yeah. They sound kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
But right, so we said on a previous podcast episode, our Black Lagoon podcast episodes were like really well received. And so we're like, what issue should we tackle this time in world affairs? And we've decided to talk about the Japanese bubble economy and economic collapse of the 90s. And in relation to how it's, sometimes it comes up in anime.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a clip that I'll put in there from Neoranga someday when I find that clip.
What?
You mean the robber isn't the bad guy? I'm just not following this.
You know, I think I have a pretty good idea what's going on.
What would be a good way for me to explain this? I know, we'll use this little guy.
Huh? You mean Kimoru?
The down and dirty dealings of Kimoru!
Hello there, I am Senator Mole!
And I'm the thuggish gangster, Camry!
Thank you so very much for gathering all those illegal votes for me the other day. I believe I owe you a kickback.
No, it's always a pleasure, Senator.
Don't worry about it. Hey, it's my banker, Kimoto.
What's up, guys? You living large and making loads of grip just like me?
Well, you see, I want to give tons of money to this guy, but I don't want to get exposed. So, what exactly is the best way to do that? You think you can help me out here?
We could just help him pay off his debt, guy.
That just might work.
I appreciate it, fellas. I'm so lucky to be wheeling and dealing with those guys, making all that pimpin' cash. But what if the economic bubble bursts? Then what? None of our books will balance out. No more money for the politicians. The press will have a field day with me. I'm gonna go down in flames. Oh, what to do? What to do? What to do? There's no way out of this mess. Oh.
So now do you understand? It all makes sense?
And maybe some examples from anime, but also in general, like what happened in Japan in the 90s? Why is it important? And why are we screwed if our current economic crisis turns into the lost decade of Japan for the last decade? So, assuming the listeners...
In the current decade.
Assuming the listeners have no idea what the bubble economy was, why it started, and then what led to its collapse.
You want to start with the Plaza Accords, or you want to...
Yeah, go for it.
So, well, on the surface... It was definitely just this your standard bubble looking back on it. You have the Plaza Accords where people got together and decided, okay, we're going to make the exchange rate change. And over 6 months, the yen is going to be worth double what it is now, regardless of what happens. It's just gonna. And they did this at the Plaza Hotel, so that's why it's called the Plaza Accords.
And they did this why?
At the Plaza Hotel?
Well, but why? Oh, why? Yeah.
So that Japan could effectively enter other global economies.
Mm-hmm.
And the upshot for your average Japanese is that now, all of a sudden, your money is worth a lot more in foreign markets. So this is when Japan bought Rockefeller Center.
Oh, I wonder if we should close the window. There's like a wild party going on.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, what better background...
Yeah,
noise to have
for the bubble economy.
Economic study than a Brooklyn cookout on Monday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday night. What day is it? I don't even know what planet I'm on.
Tuesday.
Yeah, you might want to pause.
Yeah.
So the Plaza Accords.
Bubble economy, Plaza Accords. All of a sudden, Japan has all this money to invest in other economies. And that's when you see a lot of the famous Japanese products that our generation grew up with start coming around. And really establishing dominance in these sectors.
Like Nintendo and stuff?
Yeah, like Nintendo and stuff, like Sony with their Walkman. I mean, they were very innovative. Toyota really, even though they were around before that, they really established their foothold. After that, that was pretty much the event horizon. They're not going away.
And how did we feel about that?
Well, this was the early 80s, so this wasn't the 90s bubble, but... that was not happy. So you read Japan Inc., or you look at Japanese stuff.
I guess I'm thinking of Rising Sun.
Yeah. Well, you look at Japanese entertainment, any Japanese entertainment from that bubble time, or that bubble, or the real estate bubble, the 90s bubble, mm-hmm. It's all outward looking. You know, it's all, okay, we are expanding now into this outward universe. You had stuff happening in space. You had different universes. You, like, El Hazard, it's a whole different place. And
that's a really good point.
Yeah,
no,
that's kind of outward looking... or acceptance to that kind of story and that popularity. That's really how the bubble shaped anime and manga. So you will have a few anime and mangas that mention it directly, but the bubble affected pretty much everything in terms of the types of stories that were being told and the stories that were becoming popular. And they were all outward-looking and fantastical, and we can do anything. And the Walkman reinvented the way the world, you know, consumes music, so we can we have no problem talking about a little machine that lets you beam from one place to another because we can reinvent that too, like Moldivers. So, like all this stuff, these bubble shows got very popular because they were not tied down to Japan in terms of sensibilities. They were believable from any cultural perspective, and they didn't really speak about growing up in Japan. They spoke about the future. They spoke about something going forward. They spoke about something optimistic. And then you look at Akira, and Akira was very popular, but for the wrong reason in the U.S. It was because the animation quality was really high and it had motorcycles and explosions and machine guns.
Well, they were pretty cool.
Yeah. But the whole dystopia and cultural significance of the first bubble bursting is completely lost on American audiences.
Yeah.
And so you have the second bubble happening where everything was high tech and a lot of the inflated currency was coming from real estate values. That's the biggest domino. It's not the only domino, but it's really the biggest domino to fall when you had overvaluing of Japanese real estate, specifically Tokyo real estate, that just could not exist in the real world if you said, okay, let's sell this building tomorrow.
Wait, so was Akira between the two bubbles?
Yeah.
Or?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, after the first bubble burst?
After the first bubble burst, it was a little dip.
87,
yeah.
87, is that right?
Mm-hmm. 87, 88, up until 92,
okay.
There was no more bubble. Mm-hmm. But they just, you know, swapped that bubble out for a new bubble, and most of that was carried by real estate. A lot of it was also carried out by the fact that nobody was counting on other countries to take away Japan's market share in terms of manufactured products, any kind of manufactured product.
Yeah.
But mostly electronics and stuff like that. So right when this big real estate domino falls,
yeah.
In comes Korea, in comes China to compete on a global scale with all the same products Japan makes. Their currency is still too high, so all of a sudden a Japanese product is like a Pioneer DVD player is going to be way more expensive than a Daewoo. You know, quality notwithstanding, that price difference was just too much for markets to support.
Yeah.
So that's just an example of how, you know, that domino effect started. And then what you see is you start seeing a lot of anime where life is cheap. And at first it was pretty cool. You got Ninja Scroll and stuff like that where a lot of these things are just, you know, obliterated with mindless violence. You know, you get a nice storyline, everything, happy little town, boom, everybody's dead. Bad guy showed up. And the hero stops the bad guy, but in nowhere is it addressed the fact that now the whole town is gone.
Right.
And you're in an empty village. And so, for a while, that's really cool. But then that stopped, and then it got into more of an existential kind of story that people started accepting.
Talk just a little bit about sort of the bank shenanigans, because what I was really cued into is the fact that there was so much corruption within the banking system. You don't think that was as large
corruption,
a contributor?
Corruption is an interesting word. If you could prove that they knew that they were doing that, then you could call it corruption. But well, like what happened with Shinsei, right? Was that really corruption, or was that just the fact that people didn't know how to properly count money? And it looked bigger than it was.
What is Shinsei? A bank?
Shinsei Bank, yeah.
Okay.
And
what happened?
They were on the verge of death.
Yeah.
Because they had assets which did not have corresponding, you know, debts or equities because of the way they were counted. There was double counting going on. There was people leaving out certain things like pensions that were going to have to be paid in the future. They weren't, you know, putting that on the debt side. And so everything looked fine until you started digging, and then you have like a panic, because then they realize, oh my god, we don't have all this money, somebody's got to resign because it's your fault,
which is not that much different than what happened to us 2 years ago.
So they went through that with real estate, and you know, I don't know why people didn't learn from it, but
they never do.
Shinsei, they did a couple of mergers. It always seems like mergers is like the easy way out of this situation, but Shinsei did a few mergers, and this is the same time when you had Mitsui MUFG pop on the scene, and all these other banks that had to combine with each other and start running things in a new way. As far as the
banks combining.
Yeah. They did this without... Well, they did this with government help, too, but nobody seemed to throw any tea bags around or anything like that. They brought in new management. Actually, Shinsei is run half by non-Japanese, so it's pretty much unheard of in the banking industry. Mm-hmm. They brought in the foreigner at Sony when this happened, because that looked like the way out. But as far as details go, I'm still a student, so I'm not really privy to all the shenanigans that went on. It was not good.
Well, I feel as though there was a lot of the feeling that the institutions had really failed society, and that there was a level of Yakuza infiltration. I can't believe, because that was certainly the narrative over here.
Oh, that made the news a lot?
And it's in that segment in Nioran.
Right, that you had to like bribe the post office to deliver your stuff and... Yeah, because they got special service.
Well, not just that, but they tie it very directly to members of organized crime essentially preventing the correct accounting practices from taking place. Do you think that that's just conspiracy theory?
That I think that may have happened, but I think I might disagree with the frequency at which it did. Mm-hmm. You know, gunfights probably happened in the Old West, but like today, because of what we hear, we think they happened all the time, but they were probably really rare. Mm-hmm. I think that happened here, and I think it probably happened because the Yakuza was laundering their money through these institutions, and right. they didn't want anybody to see it.
Right.
But I don't think the Yakuza came into a bank that they weren't involved in and said, hey,
no.
do this.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Institutionally set in place.
I see an upsurge in, like, what was the speed grapher?
Yeah.
Right, speed grapher, where an enormous amount of the...
What year did the...
Backstory,
what,
huh?
Around what year the second bubble burst? And that's what the bank
98?
Thing were talking about?
Is that right?
Asian flu.
Yeah.
Yeah, 97, 98.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you would have productions...
Speed grapher was in, like, 2002.
2002, so that's about right. Because, I mean, there's going to be a lag as these effects happen.
Yeah.
But you have in speed grapher just a monumentally corrupt... society, where every level of authority has been infiltrated, and the degree to which the entire the innards of Japanese society is corrupted is astounding. I mean, that's what you kind of take away from that show.
Yeah.
Aside from all of the crazy fetishism
and the bizarre happy ending. Whatever. Darkest show ever. Happy ending. What else?
Well,
because happy shows have dark endings.
You can't leave, that kind of universe with no hope. Otherwise, what are people gonna think? But now it seems like that's what's happening because of the stagnation. You get programs like Nia Under 7.
Yeah,
right? it's not a popular show. Very small production, but it's a really good mirror. Yeah, that and Yokohama Shopping Ring Log, because now everything is so stagnant. There's nothing dynamic happening. It's just about how life sucks. It's permeated by strange little events that are kind of connected to each other. And the reason that everything's weird has got to be because of some sort of outside influence that's so big and monumental that we can't change it. Like a giant crashed alien spaceship miles in the distance, or giant iron in Furikuri, there's something that we can't change that we're just going to have to roll with. And just go with it. Yeah. And so those are the recession, the recession animes. And they're still dynamic and they're still fun to watch, but that's the kind of thinking that goes with it.
More recent trends that are really alarming in anime are sort of like the desperate need for comfort shows, like where it's like nothing really happens and it's just about these girls and they're in art school and there's no real conflict and every day is just a peaceful day.
The Moe Pastoral.
Going to the convenience store, but you don't even see, you just see them come back from the convenience store. Like, there's not that there's anything wrong with that inherently, but it's just sort of like, I don't know how stressful life in Tokyo is that you need to come home and watch that at 2 in the morning and be like, now I just feel so much more relaxed and better about my life and the fact that no one's going to hire me because there are no jobs or whatever.
Yeah. I think if you're coming back at 2 in the morning and you're watching that, you're watching it for a different reason.
You probably haven't, probably haven't left to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You're still awake at 2 in the morning.
You might be right, although that show... It wasn't even as sexualized as something like Azumanga Daioh.
Oh, Sunshine Sketch?
Yeah.
You don't see anyone's underwear in very
little.
Very small amounts of underwear.
But I found that it was kind of surprising to me where it's like, what if there was a harem show where nothing sexy happens?
Well, Azumanga Daioh is a weird example because I don't think it follows that pattern. It follows a different pattern because they're redoing it. So I think... A lot of shows are getting reboots again.
Wait, as manga news?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Don't tell me these things.
You might want to cut that part out. That's kind of been old news. But
sorry.
Really? No, that's out of the loop. I guess
it's being redone, and the cover story is okay. The artist has improved so much that everything can get a nicer look to it. But
wait,
in reality,
manga?
The manga, yeah, and then they're going to do new anime.
Oh, too. I see.
The thing is, though, that is indicative of this other kind of sentiment that's happening in Japan right now in terms of business and the way people look at it. The economy is like, if we only did something different, if we had only done something different when this was happening.
and stayed with
the first mover advantage, you know, in these industries, then life wouldn't be so bad and we'd have better things. And so that's why I think people are accepting these reboots and not going with anything new.
Oh, I assumed it was like in desperate times you only want to go with what works. And I think that's true of the American, like, you want to go for the absolute lowest risk. And I think that's true of like Hollywood movies too, where they're just like, what's the lowest risk you can do? Make another movie that's in an existing franchise, because making a new franchise is really expensive and hard. Remake an older movie that was proven to be successful, but put new stars in it, and be sure to put the formulaic number of stars that you need to make this movie a success. Or whatever, you know, so it's just like the safe bet. It's not trying, you know, risky money on someone new. It's,
well, yeah, but then you compare Azumanga, I mean, yeah, it was relatively popular, but compare it to the staples.
Yeah.
Like Sazae-san or Doraemon. I mean, like, they, you know.
I mean, those have, like, a stable budget that's been going forever. There's no real.
Actually, Doraemon's getting close to out of here.
Oh, really?
From what I hear.
I thought they got a new voice cast a couple years ago.
Oh, good for them, but they're going to really start pulling the plug on.
Yeah, so they're like, time to wrap it up.
Sazae-san, when the last star winks out of the sky, I think Sazae-san will finally scroll credits on the last episode. But that thing, that you can't ever kill that. I think it'll just be when Japan is nothing but robots. No people.
It'll be robots.
It'll be robots watching Sazae-san. Yeah,
they're
making
new
episodes.
They're not really sure why they keep watching it.
But yes, those are the things that benefit from that. But these little, you know, I'm going to call it like indie, because when you compare it to these monoliths, that's what it looks like. But these little indie things, really. All right. So, but you're guaranteed if you redo it not to have the same amount that you did last time.
Oh, like the budget's not going to be as high?
Yeah, the budget's
Why
not going to be high. Your market
better?
Share is not going to be as high. There's always going to be a certain percentage of people who bought it the first time but don't see the need to buy it again.
Yeah, like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I would hope, I would think most people, but clearly.
I mean, that's just economics. I mean, there's going to be some people that will buy it again. And if it's 90%, you can make your money back on it.
You have to fill the pipeline with something.
Yeah.
And
well, it's your pipeline collapses.
Yeah.
And that's expensive.
And that's a non-starter. You, why not just declare bankruptcy at that point?
Yeah,
you know, just go out of business, wind up the enterprise if you're going to let your
well, it takes pipes. It takes the average Japanese company about 10 years to fail.
Oh God, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is something.
Watch my blood pressure go up.
There's a professor named Ryuji Yasuda. He's a really, really smart guy, and that's who told me this. And he's got all these great examples of when you have bad business practices and you see these declining curves. He starts drawing lines on the board. He's like, okay, here's your average U.S. company. It's like 3 years. And like, here's your average, you know, U.K. company. It's like 3.5. Some in Europe, it's like 5. Japan, he's like way over there. He's like, okay, 10 years is the minimum for like the company to fail if they're doing something bad and don't improve. But some can go even like to 20, and so it really has to do about how once you get to the top of the, you know, growth curve, there's no more innovation. Like, you don't change the tune; you just keep doing what you're doing, and then hope like it changes, and it never does. So you talk about filling the pipeline. Filling the pipeline could actually be the problem.
Let that pipeline collapse.
Yeah,
screw it.
Well, then you have to be willing to branch
to
out
innovate,
into new markets,
which,
new places.
Which there is not much of at all.
Wait, yeah. So even if the anime market is totally in decline, it could be another decade before it fails,
actually. Yeah.
And that's only for bad studios.
Yeah.
Mediocre studios could take 15,
mediocre studios
years.
Or studios that are part of larger conglomerates which have cash flows coming in from something else,
oh,
like
God, and
beer
do.
Or rubber or something like that, you know, will just be around forever. And Japanese hate spinning things off 100%, and they hate you know, just chopping things off, like if it's a problem. And so they'll just leave it, and they'll look for new investment, but they won't change the beat. They won't change what they do. I mean, some will, and yeah. some have tried, and some will. Of the some who try, maybe one or two will succeed. But since the efforts will be small, so will the gains.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the one thing that people don't understand.
Uh-huh.
American fans don't understand. None of this is being made for you.
Yeah.
Okay, out there, American otakus?
Yeah.
These companies don't care about you at all. You know why? Because you don't contribute 1 cent to their revenue. Okay? So if I was a company and I made something and you didn't buy it, screw you. And I'm not going to make something that you like because I know you're not going to buy it anyway.
You're getting ahead of yourself here, though, because for a little while, that was not true.
That was a bubble.
The fans. Huh?
That was a bubble.
That was a bubble.
That was a bubble.
That was a bubble, yeah.
That was a bubble because the only place that cash really was coming from was overvalued licenses. A license was sold based on its future cash flow, right? The future earnings mm-hmm. of this license. How much money will I make when I put this thing out? And these American companies were paying a lot because they would see how popular they are and estimate their sales based on certain metrics, which up until that point worked pretty well for the home media business as a whole.
Yeah.
You look at these metrics and you say, okay, this many people, you know, we got buzz metrics, we got people requesting this, let's run the numbers. All right, lowest, worst case scenario, best case scenario. All right, it's worth it to pay this. The problem is, worst case scenario wasn't even close to worst case scenario
mm-hmm.
because of the delivery mechanism. And the delivery mechanism took too long. And what happened in the meantime is you have the people who are going to buy this getting the show anyway. And so, or the people who are going to watch this on TV. I mean, yeah. Forget about home media because that's really the loss leader anyway. But the people who are going to watch this on TV have already seen it.
Yeah.
Now these TV companies cannot say to Coca-Cola or their advertisers, anybody, I can guarantee you this many people will, there's a high probability this many people will watch it because they've already seen it. So now that license is worth nothing.
Oops.
But that money was already paid. So these companies received cash that they shouldn't have.
Well, I'm glad I wasn't in that business. It's been a real bummer.
No.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's kind of rough.
Right. At least I was on one of the first ships to go down.
Oh, no.
But that's really the truth,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Been a bright
no, well, yeah, like I said, I mean, better take 1 year to fail than 10 if failure is what's going to happen. And you know what? It took my company about 4 years of negative cash flows before I said, screw you guys, I'm out of here. Ski guy. And getting home. At that point, I realized it was a management problem because they were crazy and bad people.
Well, it was a management problem, but it wasn't. I mean, there was no longer so much money coming in that you could have that kind of management shenanigans. Yeah. So it was a bellwether.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Bellwether or a harbinger,
weather bell?
You should say. Yeah, it was the canary in the proverbial coal
Well, it
line.
Became, see, it became, once there was a negative cash flow, once a company starts going into the red and the management can't fix it, then it's a management problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So they could have capitalized on it for another 3 years, maybe?
Well, no, they could have said, all right, let's change the way we do things. That's what they could have said. Let's look at the future and say, okay, maybe the company needs to fundamentally change its identity and stop being a media, home media company. Maybe we can go into something else that we have experience with, we have knowledge with, some other kind of licensing or production or something. But let's do it now because this is just going to keep going like this.
Well, right. But now you're no longer talking about the anime market.
Well,
now you're talking about...
Well, no. I mean, we could have done this in the anime market. I mean, the guy died, so that was that was kind of sad. We're talking about
production now. Yeah,
yeah. We had a whole pilot. It was done.
Guy just bad luck.
Yeah. That's bad luck. But not being able to deal with that and saying no, this company is what it has always been, and this is my company and my identity, and we can't change it. That's when you have management issues, mm-hmm. and you get a lot of these small companies. You get a lot of that.
Yeah, and then they fail. The people involved go elsewhere and they go back to business school and.
But back to blaming the fans, which is what I want to do.
No.
Defy, you know what? Don't be angry at. Everybody be angry at me, but this is what you're doing when you read a scanlation or you download a fan sub, even if it's unlicensed, what you're doing is you're making that license worthless. To the person who can sell it. And you know who can sell it? The Japanese company could sell it to the U.S. if the U.S. could say, okay, this license is worth this much because I will be able to sell it to this audience. But that audience has already seen it. The demand has evaporated, and you did it.
Yeah.
So you as a fan just took money away from the Japanese company, a license they could have sold, now they can't because of you. So that's why they don't give a crap about whether you like what they make or not.
But the fan, though, is giving you the raspberry because, of course, in anime, I think it may be true that the production levels are going to ramp down as they really do see diminished income. In the manga market, guess what? You're always going to be a loser. Because you couldn't make yourself a middleman. And that's the nature of the beast. But I don't think that the anime fan is... I think that it'll roll right...
The anime fan should not be concerned about that. Because it's not their job to be concerned
about.
It's the company's job to be concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And so the company needs to address that issue. Right now they're addressing it by not caring.
Right. Well, they can do that for a while.
Yeah. Well,
they can't do that
in Japan either. Here's the problem. Japan's running out of people.
Yeah.
Japan is running out of people, which means they're running out of customers, means they better start caring.
They're running out of liquidity also, apparently.
It's amazing. There's another bubble happening. I don't know how you can have a bubble during a recession, but there's another bubble happening where all these people are putting their money into foreign exchange trading accounts.
Oh, I don't know anything about this.
There's a Forex bubble going on in Japan, and you have these little old ladies putting $20,000, $30,000 into a bank account, but it's really not a bank account, it's a foreign exchange account. So in the morning she'll change all that money over to dollars, and in the evening she'll change it all back over to yen, and it either went up or down or whatever.
Oh, weird.
And there's tons of that happening, and I did time at one of these companies working over the summer, and it is really kind of awful. I mean, they're like, you know, I don't care how much money she's gets from her pension, you get her to put all of it in our account. And with Forex, not only can you lose it all in 5 seconds, but then you can be on the hook for further losses of money you never had in the first
place. Oh, my God.
What?
Yeah. So it's not good. But the reason they do this is because they pay higher interest than the banks.
Right.
And the Japanese version of FDIC works the opposite of ours. We have a level, what is it,
100,000?
100,000. And below. Their FDIC is 100,000 and above. So if you have less than that, you're not insured.
What the hell is that?
It's backwards.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's literally what that is.
But no, I mean...
But so these Forex accounts do have that insurance. They will insure amounts for under $10,000. Not if you lose
not
it
if
by
you
being
lose
stupid,
it.
But if the bank fails,
right?
Then they'll insure that. So
that's
the other bubble.
Yeah, that's a lousy hedge. Don't...
Yeah. You're like, don't do that.
Old Japanese ladies, don't listen.
I'm
listen,
sure
listen,
listen
to my
this.
Advice.
So these banks can't use that money to bankroll other loans, right? Because it keeps changing all the time. It happens so fast. These are hourly trades that these can't. This equity can't bankroll other longer term projects. So it's going to be harder for anime companies to borrow anything.
So they're just trying to make money on the float.
Yeah,
that is
despicable.
So crazy. I don't even know what to say.
Well, it seems sane.
I might say criminal.
Yeah.
I might say
it
criminal.
It seems sane because in Japan, the advertising makes it seem fine. Of course, you know, like, you know, they advertise DDT as something good too, but you know, it didn't work out. But that's happening. It's I would be concerned. I haven't heard anybody being concerned, but I would be concerned.
Yeah. You're like, I'm concerned.
But I haven't brought it up with people over there. We always usually talk about heavy industry or something.
Right. Well, it's also my understanding that when GDP is discussed in the GDP versus debt is discussed in the news, Japan is frequently held up as a country that has, I believe, 120% debt to GDP ratio.
It's not good.
Something like
it's,
that.
It's a ridiculous debt.
And yet,
how is that even possible? And you're going to have to run those numbers because GDP is gross domestic
product.
And what is the debt index that you're talking about?
The debt index is the amount of debt that is held, you know, the
by the country.
We're talking about bonds. Well, in this case, in Japan's case, it is.
Yeah.
It's that all of the
all
domestic,
the debt is
it's
internal.
Held domestically.
Yeah.
So
the country's debt.
We worry about whether or not China is going to push the button on us because they own 20% or something.
But Japan would be pushing the button on itself.
They bought
right,
American
which is why they're not going to do that.
Yeah, which is why they're still building stuff
but
that doesn't need to be
built. I don't get it. Can you explain to me how that works?
Domestic. Yeah, you know what? This is going to be the most exciting show ever.
Yeah,
I can
I don't
just
care.
Tell.
This is now.
No, it's domestic policies of take care of your own first. And so they have to keep people employed. And they do that a few ways. One is the way they calculate unemployment is really skews it because there are a lot of groups that don't get counted that should get counted as not having jobs. Secondly, the way you do that also is you just spend on things like bridges or maintenance or new train lines.
Oh, okay, to give a concrete example, everyone who had a dad who worked for something like the Canadian government, and he explained how some of the budgeting worked where, like, yes, every year we have to tear up this road and repave it because that is our departmental budget, and if we do not spend it, it will be less the following year. So at a point where we might actually need the budget, we want to be able to have it. So in order to do that, we have to do pointless projects to continue to guarantee. Do you mean that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's not exactly like that kind of thing where they say we won't get the budget again.
Yeah.
It's like these people... we got to keep these people employed.
So
otherwise, they'll be unemployable later.
So do they do things like when we were in Korea, you complained about like there are these walkways that go over roads that you probably don't need
walkways.
One. Or during the Great Depression here, they did things like plant a bunch of forests or something.
Yeah, well, that's okay. So there's in Japan right now, there are some highway building going on. There's a dam project which is considered unnecessary, which they big political move to pull the plug on that.
Oh.
And they stopped it, and it was just huge news.
Yeah,
to do that. Yeah, it was. So there was another dam project that they said they're not going to do
because it was creating jobs, but they decided to pull the plug.
Yeah, because it wasn't going to do. I mean, it wasn't going to really.
It's not
do
productive.
Anything. Yeah,
it's not, and ultimately, it's not productive. So later, which is what I can't. Yeah. I have more fear for Japan in that debt situation than I do the United States.
Well, Japan can get out of that in two ways, but one of the obvious ones is FDI. So if they get some foreign direct investment, they're on the global scale of foreign direct investment, if you look at these reports, their bubble is like so tiny. It's like 1.4%. And the U.S. is like so big.
Yes.
You know? But so if Japan stops becoming so insular and starts laxing up on these regulations about who can and can't do FDI because they're worried about foreigners coming in the country. If they relax on that, then the debt problem can go away. You know, they'll still have debt. Every country should have debt.
Right.
Otherwise nothing works. But when it's that, when you have that ratio, it's a problem.
I wouldn't say nothing works.
Well,
there's good reasons to be expansionary.
Yeah. So, but what that requires is two things. One, FDI in terms of capital, and two, FDI in terms of actual people. Two things that Japan can't handle right now, politically or culturally.
Mm-hmm.
Economically, they can handle it fine. The country's dense, but it's not like out of space. You know, it's not out of room. It's not Shanghai. You can get more people in there. And there's not really a lack of infrastructure because the rail systems are self-sustaining. So it's not like more people more people means more funds that earn. So they'll be able to use that. The problem is they don't want foreigners to come in and stay.
They have a serious problem with that.
Yeah.
Hold on,
they really don't like that.
Make sure I get this saved.
Otaku USA Magazine proudly presents a new podcast. Fresh in caliber, soaked in 31 different flavors of win.
Wow, raspberry win!
And fired from a maser cannon of pure love.
I can pick it up!
This podcast will seek to deliver to you what many of its valiant readers have asked of us many times before. Bearing that in mind, what does this show actually contain, you ask? Why, the news, of course. But much, much better. Let me explain. Friday, Ace, the podcast edition, is your chance to catch up on all the happenings in Japanese pop culture from this past week, including news recaps, music rankings, and all those interesting tidbits you would have known about had you not given into that burning urge to have a life. Download new episodes every Friday exclusively from OtakuUSAMagazine.com.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that's also happening in anime.
Oh,
these anime and manga. These aren't made for you.
The only
they're foreigner. They're made for Japanese.
The only big example of foreigners in anime, like in Ghost in the Shell, the second part,
second gig. It was really very much in the text there.
How did it work? There was like
they had a bunch of guest workers, and the guest workers didn't want to leave.
They lived in like a ghetto-y labor camp or labor city.
Because
they turned into terrorists.
They didn't want to be they didn't want to be deported.
Yeah.
And they had lived there for an awful long time now they were no longer needed. And so
there's no need to deport them also, because these people usually have skill sets that go beyond what they were doing. And you know, yeah, it might lead to a little bit of stress in certain areas, but it's much better to have foreigners come into your country that way than to come in with parachutes and guns.
Yeah, well, that's what we were talking about earlier this evening, and this is yet a scenario that I would have never conceived that China would be so muscular as to consider expanding their influence in that fashion.
If it's empty real estate.
Are you going to explain
then it's empty real estate
scenario, or am I just going to cut that part out later?
No.
Well, you have to cut it out.
It's not really a scenario. I mean, a great movie. I mean, Red Dawn in Japan, that would be great, man. That would be awesome. Except Japan, nobody owns guns.
That's not what you were talking about earlier at all.
Everybody would have to throw,
They take out their grandfather's samurai swords.
And then slit their bellies open.
Yeah, right. That'll do a lot against an AK-47.
Because
here's the thing. Like, eventually, people are going to... more people are going to have to go there.
So what they were talking about at dinner that nobody seems to want you to fill anyone in on, despite this being a podcast, is like there's a scenario where on the global scale, North Korea pulls something and that forces other people to take action and to take out North Korea, at which time instead of South Korea re-owning North Korea, because now it's mostly empty land filled with whatever starving people and horrible... China rolls in and expands to the border,
which is likely.
Yeah, China's already nervous about that. I can't see them just letting that happen and being like, "Yeah, whatever, guys." No, if stuff goes down in North Korea, China's going to be the first one across that border and saying, "Mine, mine."
Yeah, I think that's likely
because they know how to not necessarily they know how to handle it, but they're not afraid of the risk of handling an occupied North Korea.
Well, North Korea is a headache that nobody wants.
Yeah.
If others wanted the headache, they would have.
Yeah, it's not like that country is hard to invade.
Right.
It's not like it'd be tough to show up and just own the place.
Well, it would be tough for Seoul, but it would not be tough for anyone who isn't Seoul.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, get out of Seoul.
I'm sorry to be laughing at your expense, South Korea.
They know that
you did it to yourselves. Your sunshine laws.
Because keeping up the aggressive policies, that would have totally made everything.
No, not at all. But this was their alternative?
Well, it's in South Korea's best interest to keep North Korea where it is and just wait until everybody starves to death.
Right.
Which, you know...
For the South Korean nationals, that's fine. For the South Korean humanists...
That's terrible.
Right. Maybe not so much. Yeah. Remember, plenty of family still lives in North Korea.
Well, there's family and then there's... family. I mean, there's people who remember each other, and then there's people who are told, "Oh, by the way, you have a relative on the other side."
That's true. But there are still families split asunder.
That first group is going to run out of people much quicker than the second group. So once that happens, I don't think there's going to be much support to do anything nice over there. It's an injured animal is a dangerous thing indeed, and if CIA wants to fake a North Korean attack on China, they might actually do that. Lizard people. Anyway,
never happened.
If that
never happened,
this is not coming to a Hitalia comic anytime soon.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it should be.
Yeah. Well, how would this work out in Hitalia?
What would North Korea? Character
there is, isn't there?
I don't know.
It should look like an emaciated, death camp survivor. But
very patriotic.
Doesn't. Yeah. I know the South Korean character is the reason why it's not on TV.
Yes, right. That's right.
It was like animated in South Korea or something, and they were offended.
Yeah. Well, it is offensive.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no intent to offend.
That they think.
And yet.
Yeah, it's offensive
and
anyway.
Yet.
But maybe we should get back to the lost decade and what it means to be in a recession. So let's say, I don't know, I heard a study in the news recently that talked about how people who graduate during poor economic times, 10 years after they graduate, regardless of the economy, they're doing worse than their peers who graduated from college during an economic boom. I think that blows.
In Japan, that's not going to be true.
In the U.S.
Well, but in Japan, it's not going to be true because why?
Because of the population curve. There's going to be an extreme shortage
of
people who graduated at X amount of time with X amount of skill set.
Yeah.
That demand is... Japan's still going to have to do business.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they'll solve the problem. But eventually, that thin part of that population curve is going to be in demand big time. And they'll have their pick of where they go and how much they get paid for.
But for now, that can't be the scene. It's got to be people, like companies that are not going out of business or whatever. Like, isn't it hard for young
people? No, it's not. It's not great, but give it a minute.
Give it a minute.
Give it a minute. Well, you know, we're talking between 5 and 10 years. This is really going to be fundamentally changed. Japan, everybody says Japan's on the way out. No. Japan is about to go through an immense change, a time of rapid fluctuation. And it is in these times where fortunes are made and lost, growth and innovation happens, and that's where you want to be there on the ground.
Yeah.
When that happens. This is kind of little Hamiltonian, but you know, a little instability is helpful. And in this case, we're not talking about actual military instability. We're talking about cultural and economic instability, and that's really going to help Japan get back into the game.
So it's in your mind, it's all a question of whether they are willing to open.
Mm-hmm. They're gonna. Even the old timers, even the guys who run around with the flags who park outside my apartment and say, expel the foreigners, you talk to them, they know. I mean, half of those guys are Korean. It's true. It's true. Half of those guys are actually Korean.
And they're like, expel the foreigners.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Well, because really what those right-wing groups do is launder money for the pachinko parlors, but don't tell anybody. Which, by the way, are also Korean. Which is why they're
that's
Korean.
That's crazy.
Actually, from the Korean wave.
If you measured it just in terms of absolutes, pachinko is 51% of the Japanese economy.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Oh, and we brought up the example from anime of Narima Daikon Brothers, which had an episode about the Korean wave where hot Korean soap actors had their faces on pinball machines or something. No, it was like a pachinko.
It's like pachinko a host parlor, club.
Host club.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of that. I tried to play pachinko. I really couldn't get into it.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah, I might as well take 100 yen coins and flush them down my toilet.
Well, they don't make such jingly noises, though.
You
don't get to watch the flashing lights.
The little slot machine ones are cool, though, because it's a pachinko, it's a slot machine, and a movie plays all at the same time. But it really gets boring. And so
you may not be like smoking enough.
It's a movie theater.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was definitely smoking enough with all the
secondhand smoke.
Yeah,
right.
They don't call it secondhand smoke in Japan. What do they call it? They call it like existential smoking or something. something that just made me laugh like so much, but it's hilarious. But they don't see that as a problem at all.
Well, Japan political moves in the past year, they are certainly preparing to have a much smaller footprint. They themselves seem to believe that they are preparing.
What do you mean by footprint?
They're planning to scale back their at least politically
their
outreach into the rest of the world.
That's making them unpopular. Because
where
in Japan?
Oh, in Japan. Yeah. Okay.
This whole, I mean, they not to sound like I read.
Look who just won the election.
Where?
In Japan.
The one that just happened?
Yeah.
Who won the one that just happened?
What are you talking about?
The SDP? That's LDP? Been LDP? That's been in power for
that didn't
forever?
Just happen.
Yeah, that was,
that was a while ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
The LDP is out of here. That is groundbreaking. But the new party is losing popularity because, like I said, not to sound like I read WorldNet Daily, but the whole Hopi changiness of their... of their message is not really resonating anymore.
Right, but they were elected on that basis. They were elected on the basis that they were going to reduce the footprint.
And it was,
of the
by
country.
The way, it was a close call. They didn't sweep in, on this massive wave of what everybody wanted. It was significant in the fact that the LDP has never lost.
The American news media certainly made it sound as though...
Yeah, they almost never covered Japan, and when that happened, they were like, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it was huge upset.
There are still people who want to keep doing what they're doing, but there's enough people who said, enough is enough, and we got to make a change. And that is, unfortunately, one step in an agonizingly slow growth process, which I think will come to a head within the next decade, and will change Japan fundamentally forever. And you want to be there when it happens, because that's when you can make the money. And that's when we'll see some of the most amazing cultural creations coming out of there. As long as they can be monetized, as long as a company can sell them, which is what is happening now, publishing companies make manga, they sell manga. They don't make it to not sell it.
Right.
But anyway, as long as a business model can be employed, we will see some amazing things.
Interesting.
Well, I certainly hope that's the case for your sake.
I mean, because I pretty much put all my chips on that horse.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the way things are kind of going now, compared to the last time we recorded with you, is now there is all this legal free streaming content on Crunchyroll and whatnot, and even when it comes to manga, there are several sites where you can read chapters totally for free and legally, like the new Rumiko Takahashi title and whatever. But there's also the Viz Sig Icky site, which is from Icky magazine. Mm-hmm. So what's weird is I don't actually read that site, despite it being filled with a bunch of manga that I would like to read. Instead, I wait for the book to come out. And I wonder how much of their book publishing plan is did they print a book because it did well on the website? Or did they or did they use just the website as a promotional tool, knowing that people will be familiar with the title and then pick it up? I'm not really sure.
I think they're figuring out how to use it. And I think what they're trying to do is build a knowledge system of using knowledge management of this website is a microcosm of what the potentiality could be of this property.
Instead of getting ratings from a TV station to be like, well, we know this title is our most popular title. Mm-hmm. And then, So
then they want to, you want to see, okay, can this work, can this popular title work cross-cluster? Meaning the people who like this are from one demographic cluster, right? Certain kind of people. They've already seen it. Can we take this, the reason why they like it? Will other groups that haven't seen this like it? And can we make money by selling it as a product? Mm. And so they're still figuring out how to do that. I wouldn't know how to do that instantly. You'd need a lot of experience. I could set up a way to learn from that.
Yeah.
And after a couple of years, if you do it the right way, you can then say, okay, what works in Japan is not what always works in the U.S., vice versa. Here is our rubric of how we figure that out.
I talked to one really interesting guy. I think he worked for DC Comics, although I guess DMX just went under, so maybe this doesn't prove anything, but he mentioned how titles that become really popular in the US tend to also do well on a worldwide scale. Mm. That whatever was a big hit here, they knew they could sell in their other foreign markets, which was, I don't know, a strange viewpoint. Interesting.
That's because American entertainment, popular culture entertainment, has a high export value.
Right.
Japanese right now does not.
Right.
It did.
Whatever the one manga title is that does well in America, it can do well anywhere.
Yeah.
It's as a test market.
So, but the reasons that Americans like it.
Because it probably has the right.
Yeah, is because it elements. Can escape that.
Yeah.
So, it resonates more with the rules of American export culture than Japanese export culture. Mm. So, but again, that's how you test the waters. Poke around like that.
But anyway, from just that, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Japan's lost decade and what it means to be a person who what does it mean for the average Joe to live through a horrible recession?
Well, I think that the most emblematic cultural object to come out of the lost decade, I don't think it's anime. I think it's Battle Royale, the movie. I think that is incredibly tied to that feeling of worthlessness, and remember the one kid who comes home to...
Wait, can you just briefly say, for anyone who, for some reason, hasn't seen the film or read some of the manga or read the novel, what is it about?
It's about a group of high schoolers who, because of the BR Act, in an insane way, they are supposed to be a model to the rest of the country, and that they get shipped to this island and have to kill each other.
I think you missed, like, isn't it like the worst performing class in the country?
Well, I think there's a lottery aspect to it too, isn't there?
Among really bad classes.
Yeah.
Like the class full of the most delinquents and whatever, who's going to fail, they're shipped off to an island where they have to kill each other. Like what?
At-risk students.
At-risk students, nice. Right, as they're called.
Right. Leave no child behind because they're killing each other off.
Leave no child alive.
Leave one.
One
person wins, and they have
to... So everybody goes to this island, and they have to fight, because at the end of a certain amount of time, if more than one person is alive, these monitoring devices that they're wearing will all explode.
Right.
So that's the ultimate motivation for you to stay alive and kill everybody else is to do this. But it's important to note, and you brought it up before, and I'm really glad you didn't skip over it, this is sanctioned.
Right.
By the government.
That is absolutely correct.
That's what's so crazy about this story. This is a sanctioned government thing.
And it's supposed to be beneficial.
Yeah, it's supposed to help.
And this came out during the last decade?
It came out during the last decade, but there's just this horrible feeling of you can't win. You can't quit the game. You can't break even. You can't make friends. You can't. It's hyper competitive. And you can't even sing the blues about it because...
Someone will hear you and shoot you.
Yeah.
I laugh not because it's funny, but because I'm not here to make friends. Nobody says that.
I didn't come here to make friends. I'm not here to make friends.
I'm not here to make friends. I'm not here to make friends.
I ain't here to make no friends.
I'm not here to make friends.
I'm not here to make friends.
I'm not here to make friends.
You know, I'm not here to make friends. You guys are not my friends. I'm not here to make friends with you.
I didn't come all the way from D.C. to make new friends.
I'm not here for them, and I'm not here to make friends.
I'm not here to make friends with you guys. I could care less.
Fuck them. I wasn't there to make friends.
Nobody says that in Battle Royale, except actually they do, but then they all kill each other.
Yeah.
Right.
And I just, what sticks in my mind from that movie is the poor kid who comes home to find his salaryman father, who hasn't been able to get a job, hanging.
Yeah.
And he
left a note that's like, do your best.
Yeah, that's just whatever. What Gambatte written all the way.
That's the most destructive thing. Metropolis Magazine had an article about how Gambare is the worst word, the most destructive word in Japanese right now.
Nice, what do they have to say?
Because it's so... I forget exactly, a lot of the details, but it was just like, it's so vague, and it makes someone think that... it's not exactly lip service, but it's like that scene in The Simpsons where at the end of the episode, they dug a giant hole and they said, how are we going to get out of here? And they said, we'll dig our way out.
Yeah, dig up.
So they said it just encourages a lot of that. And you end up putting blinders on to other, not only other problems, but other possible solutions.
It's true. Yeah. So, like, a loose translation is, like, do your best or do what's right.
So it's just a gambare, and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
Gambare at this same system that made me kill myself.
Keep hitting your head against that wall.
Precisely.
Because eventually it'll fall down.
It's going to work.
It's like trench warfare.
Yeah, it's attrition.
Just send the next wave in.
Yeah. But here's the important thing. In Battle Royale, the movie, the system was destroyed, and it ended up that the things that were supposed to blow up, some of the participants worked together, took out that system, which allowed this more than one student to leave alive, and allowed them to kill the main villain, beat Takeshi, at the end, who is the funniest death scene in all of movies. And how did that happen? That happened through incredibly out there innovation, right? Innovative thinking, not doing what they were supposed to be doing, even though the two badasses, they were two badass characters, right?
Yeah.
They were success models, dinosaurs of what this was. And they were there. And they were there to ensure that everyone did the same thing. There was the new guy, right? He's the new generation. He's like, what do I do? I don't know. I have to gambare.
Right.
I guess. But then there were the weirdos, these nerds, right? And they figured out how to hack the system. Now, that's entertainment value. And maybe this wasn't even intended, but you can get the message that the way to get out of that trap is to be innovative.
Except they then get back to the mainland, and they're public enemy number one.
Yeah. Well, you got to have a sequel.
But, well, you got to have a sequel. Oh, God, no, you don't. 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 Oh, never. No, there was only one. There was only ever one movie.
The only reason that movie exists, actually, because it can't be like a movie that doesn't exist, and there are those. Sonny Chiba looks exactly like Wayne Newton. It's just too cool. That's awesome. Looks exactly like Wayne Newton.
But I think your analysis is spot on. I think that's very, very good analysis.
That's
actually
what they were doing in the last decade. I mean, I went to a Komatsu factory, and everything was clean. Everything's Ida Shimasen, everything, even restaurants, whatever. But it's so manufactured. They don't know how to be happy anymore.
Yeah.
There's a self-help guru in Japan who's a foreigner, been there since the 70s. He's got a manga about that he had commissioned himself about his life story. I love these self-help guys. It's They're not like really work for me, it'll totally work for you.
It's not the crazy cult guy.
No. Okay. He's a normal dude, business guy, Taekwondo or Aikido master or something like that.
Oh no, it's
a normal dude.
The kickboxing guy? No.
No. Okay. No, it's like Joe somebody. He's got a goatee. I don't know. I'll find again. But he's got a manga about his life where he has actually some really good insights about how you can see this, even though everything's fine, how, like, where you can look to see where the real trouble is. And even though you go out and you party hard and you have karaoke and you have nomikais, it's become procedural. It's gone from innovation to operation. Mm-hmm. And then they try to make innovation into operation. And that's when you kill it.
And this is the orthopraxical difficult. Precisely.
Orthopraxical TM. Noah.
No, I read it in a book. I mean, do you want to define orthopraxy for our listeners?
Sure.
Might be new
orthodoxy
to our show.
We'll talk about Italian in a minute, I swear.
Yeah. Orthodoxy is correctness of thought. Mm. Orthopraxy is correctness of practice or ritual.
Right.
So when everything gets fetishized into the proper way of doing things, it is divorced from thought. And don't get me wrong, orthopraxy is not in and of itself bad, and in fact, it's necessary if you want to perpetuate quality. Orthopraxy gets passed down from generation to generation. There's a lot to be said for it. However, if you take that as the core value of your society, you're not going to be very happy, because it's not in human nature, I would argue.
I would say Naruto is stuck in that right now.
What, like the
50 episodes of Shippuden that we haven't watched?
No. The production of it. The production of Naruto and other, whether they be, you know, perennials or one-shots, is all about what do they think makes a good anime. And it's all orthopractical benchmarks.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And there's the creativity is there, but it's an orthopractical creativity. We have, let's put up our choice set.
Oh, first. No, it's like a set menu. Yeah. And in Japanese restaurants.
Exactly. And the creativity comes from, okay, which set do we do first? That's it. That's it. There's no new set that comes in.
Yeah.
And so that's why they don't know how to end this thing. Because it also keeps making money, so why?
Right.
You know,
don't fix it.
Why kill the cow when you get the sex for free? But like, what? I think I'm mixing things up.
Several minutes. Yeah.
spent time in Hokkaido. Right.
That's where Bonnie is right now.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Well. Anyway. That's why we're seeing the same anime again. Who was I with? We were with him when you visited.
Someone else?
The manga, the guy who draws the manga.
Oh, Felipe Smith.
Felipe Smith had this wonderful, wonderful tirade about how Naruto was Dragon Ball again.
Yeah, he was very
funny
about it.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. But in that way, and with those insights, you can totally see this orthopractical fixation, which prevents breaking the mold. And the last time we had a mold break, it went from all this outward-looking type stuff, which is still just a lot of space cowboy shit, and back down to earth into this kind of dystopian, you know, everything sucks, but at least it'll look nice when we make it kind of thing. And so, but that's, I think Hitalia is almost that, but Hetalia might be cool.
Hetalia is emblematic of that?
Well, it's emblematic of... It's half emblematic of that. It's half part of the problem and half part of the solution.
How does that work?
It is a daywalker.
Go on.
Yeah,
tell me more.
Well, the whole fetishization of personification of concepts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Airplanes or cars mm-hmm. or philosophies mm-hmm. or in this case, it's not countries that Hetalia is personifying. It's a country's history that each character is.
Through a filter of Japanese...
Through an incredibly incredibly strong filter of Japanese naivete.
Right.
Which I think should be obvious to a lot of people. And this,
if
this
they knew history, it would be.
Yeah. Well, no, not in Japan. A lot of people who listen to this show will probably know that glossing over the Bataan Death March or Nanking or bringing up the problems with the islands off of Hokkaido that Russia will never give up, by the way. Nor really should they. I mean, you know, they took them with guns and stuff. And, you know, Japan wants them back. They can buy them. But the last time that offer was made, it caused a huge stink. And the guy who said it, who was actually a TV host, had to give a public apology.
Ooh. Oh, really?
About doing that.
Oh,
for suggesting Japan buy back those islands from Russia.
That were already theirs.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, no, a lot of people said don't do that. There was a group that said they already belong to Japan. There was another group that said that's imperialistic. We can't go back to doing that.
Okay.
And there was a third group that said what?
Right.
Yeah, I'm late for work. Out of my way.
Hopefully that was the vast majority.
Well, there was, but whatever, it's enough to make the papers and cause a public apology, even in Japan where these apologies happen all the time, it still means that he hit a nerve. There's a lot of offense taken by people who say, you know, okay, that event, that was not a schoolyard scrabble, you know, that this manga is making it out to be. You know, people died. And not only that, but this one in particular is special to me because it's part of my cultural identity and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But I'd really doubt they'd give a crap if Hetalia made the Trail of Tears look like the American guy was stealing, the American character was stealing the lunch money of the Indians.
I don't know if we laugh at ourselves at that point.
No, well, you know, I wouldn't do that. But
wait, which battle was made out to be a schoolyard scuffle? Is that a real example?
Pick one.
Geez,
you read Hetalia, I haven't read it.
Not everything.
Or watched,
I forget what it. Yeah, and this was when it was just coming out. I mean, I haven't seen Hetalia stuff in a while.
Well, you know, at Anime Boston, they had to.
This is before I started class. I mean, I can't really read anything.
Right.
Now.
Yeah, I'm like, you don't have time to read anything.
They had a panel on why you shouldn't dress like a Nazi, in case you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But only people who were in agreement showed up, as one would expect. No Nazi cosplayers wandered in to be like, what?
Well, really?
I saw a Nazi cosplayer on the subway in Tokyo.
What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was coming out of a nightclub. I looked at him. I just really looked at him. He looked at me. I looked at him, and I whipped out my cell phone. I went, click. I got a picture of him. And, of course, it wasn't like... If we're talking about the actual standards of cosplay, it wasn't a very good Nazi cosplay because it was very modern-y looking. I mean, he had a lot of flair on. You know? It wasn't. You know,
it's like a rave pin. That's
black. Yeah, it was like a rave Nazi. And I'm standing there, and I think to myself, you know, I could punch this guy square in the mouth and maybe not get deported, but I don't think he has any idea why I would do that.
Right. True.
He has no idea.
We should be meaningless. You have to explain in Japanese why I'm about to punch you, but then you might run for it.
Yeah, it's like I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
I wonder to what extent the real neo-Nazis are pissed off about this sort of practice. You know,
I don't think the real neo-Nazis know anything about what's going on in Japan.
Two subculture.
I don't know.
There's one Japanese.
Know,
there's
actually.
One real Japanese neo-Nazi. You can see him every day and. Yoyogi Park. He brings a folding chair, and he has an incredibly nice Wehrmacht uniform. But he wears an SS hat and boots. So, and he sits there and he reads the paper all day.
It's performance
art. In this uniform.
Oh, he doesn't even. That is his his statement.
Yep.
Was he some old dude or something?
Yeah, he's got a job somewhere. He's not that old.
Oh, okay.
But he's definitely what even me in my 30s, I'd call that guy old.
That's
maybe 50.
That's weird.
50.
Because if you're that's retired. Weird.
But I would suggest that neo-Nazis are probably, I mean, they're very definitely online, and they have got to be pretty clued into their online presence.
Then
they've got to know.
Then doesn't what's happening in Italia become a force for good?
Aha!
It does not that dilute the message. So if someone online can see what the true Nazi message was and see this weird modern incarnation, if you can see both, and that the original message gets diluted.
And this is how you probably read Freakonomics, right? So you got the Ku Klux Klan.
Maybe you'd like to explain it for the benefit.
Well, no, of course I will. But,
okay.
But
I've been reading a lot of stuff lately.
So
some goes in, some goes out.
It's my understanding. That's
typically, it's a very difficult thing to do, as we discussed a little bit in the Black Lagoon show, to take on underground movements and insurgencies and so forth. But and I don't remember the man's name. This would be in the 1930s, I believe. There was a fellow who decided that Ku Klux Klan are a bunch of bums, and he tries to figure out a way. He's just some guy, right? He tries to figure out some way where he can take them on and really make a difference. And so you've got the Klan, and how the Klan operate is completely anonymously. They wear their outfits and they go around terrorizing people, and it works because of the terror. So what he does is he becomes a Klan member. And he learns all of their passwords and mystical handshakes and whatnot, and then goes to a radio producer who is in charge of the Superman show and makes the Ku Klux Klan Superman's adversary and puts all of this real jive into the show. And so suddenly kids are playing Superman versus the Ku Klux Klan. And it devastated them. Mm. It devastated their membership. Seriously. All of a sudden, they wondered who talked. How could their incredibly devastating wave of terror come to this, a children's radio show? And so, pretty much single-handedly, of course, with the help of mass media, the guy seriously undercut what was a big problem.
But there's already been Superman versus the Nazis.
Right. Well, I'm not, but you're the one who's suggesting that you recontextualize it, and all of a sudden it has much less.
But here's the thing, that's not going to work for the Japanese audience.
No, because they already don't.
But what it does work for is anybody who might be a fan of the show to help come to a better understanding of why maybe you shouldn't wear that yet, because it hasn't happened.
Right.
Like I could dress as a Imperial Roman soldier.
Right.
I don't think any of the French are going to get, either the Gauls are going to get angry about that. But there once was a time when that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
And you would cause...
You can have Union Confederate reenactments, right? Yeah. And people... It's all
right on the border.
That's been, 150 years, plus or minus?
Oh. Gettysburg was an awesome
Civil
movie.
Right. So maybe in another 100 years, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
Culturally.
I mean, because
enough time will.
Yeah. In no way is the audience aware that the ideologies are attached to these things, and these uniforms aren't even real uniforms anyway. They're just conglomerations of other stuff. The Italian idiot is in light blue, and he doesn't have any feathers. Come on, what the hell kind of Italian uniform is that?
But of course, it's the symbology. The symbology carries through.
Yeah. But in the destructive way, it's Japan staying very naive. In the productive way, it is at least admitting that there is some a much further involvement in foreign goings-on than was previously, recently felt.
That's an interesting point. And I think it would do a world of good if at the end of every episode of Italia, you'd get one of those little eye catches. If you'd like to know more about the Second World
visit
War, visit your local library.
Don't do that.
Like, don't visit
Don't do that. No, you'll get those vans, you'll get those flag vans in front of your studio before you can say boo, because you'll learn bad things. about what Japan did. And Japan can do no wrong.
Well, but this is why, before I mentioned, you know, the wrongness is the not being instructed in history. This is a bad thing, you know.
So Hitalia's existence is simply a symptom of a shortcoming in education in the Japanese system.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's certainly...
Wait. Okay, go.
I don't think that there's a causal factor there. But what you say is interesting, because is this the first step to people knowing more, you know?
I think it's a first step in people acting differently. They don't even have to know more to be more receptive to future ideas.
Oh, man. That means that they, generally speaking, that puts them in, like, you know, the larval stage. And
yeah.
The unhatched egg stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm over there, and I'm realizing, you know, that there is no way. I mean, I'll be retired before the kind of idea that Neo Tokyo has, that you can just show up in Japan and get a job and start working there, mm-hmm. is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they're going to need. They're going to need that.
A country where you can just show up, get a job.
Yep.
Doesn't so, it, in its own way, that's really...
I mean, to the extent that the United States has that. I mean, even you need some rules. You can't, you know... Yeah.
Well, the United States has that, I think, pretty much more than...
You can show up
than,
and get a job illegally.
Anywhere else?
Yeah.
I don't know about anywhere else now. Certainly in circa, you know, 19...
Yeah.
Maybe even not that late, but 1870, maybe? You could show up and get off the boat and start
working. Well, you could show up and you could start working, but then there was the fact that where you worked did not necessarily protect you in any way. Now that is that was everywhere at the time.
Yeah.
With the, you know, you get stuff that gets you a triangle shirtwaist fire. And Japan, right, we're already at the level where those precautions are in place and cannot be removed. So it's a different...
Okay, that's fair.
We can't look at the same...
Although, yes,
rates and
triangle shirtwaist fire, you had worldwide.
Wait,
there were no standards.
Wait. Yeah. I know what that means because it happens. I took classes in an NYU building that was where the fire took place.
Yeah. Why don't you explain it?
I will. It was a shirt making factory.
Indeed.
And the workers were in such poor conditions that there were...
This is in the heart of New York City.
In the heart of New York City, right near Washington Square Park, which you can see in many movie, but most notably perhaps Sleepy Hollow. But... or the movie Washington Square Park. The working conditions were so bad, there weren't, like, fire escapes and not adequate windows or ventilation, and things caught on fire and lots of people died.
The management locked the doors.
Oh, I forgot about that part.
See? The management locked
kind of
the doors.
Crucial.
Because...
Good God, why would they do that?
People were taking breaks. Like, going
so
to the bathroom.
So they didn't want them to go out.
Yeah. And they locked the doors, and they really restricted access to where you could and could not go. Now, this, of course, would violate every modern fire code that we have,
right.
Because we have these codes because of this
because
fire.
Because of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So
now we have those locked doors that, I mean, things are restricted because of security, but they're fire doors that you open them and an alarm goes off.
But you can get the hell out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that really caused a lot of legislation to happen, and long story short, there are these kinds of rules in Japan. So you can, going back to your earlier example of you know, early 20th century or late 19th century America, people coming up and working. The reason those floodgates could open so much is because everything was all about industrial productivity and not about human rights or safety or anything like
this
that.
This is like because of the Industrial Revolution.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's fair.
So,
but it was also like that because it sucked so much everywhere else.
Yes, it did. None of these protections were anywhere.
Yeah.
But now they're everywhere, except Thailand, by the way, where there was an exact repeat of the shirtwaist fire not even a few years ago.
Huh.
Yeah.
In a Thailand shirt factory, 188 people are dead now because of a fire where the door was locked and they had to jump out the building. Hooray. Some things never change. And, you know, I'm taking an MBA class right now, and talk about Japanese naivety. They are not addressing things like this.
Really?
At all. We were talking, this is great, we were talking about BP in November of 2009.
No.
And I was the only person
British
in the class, even the French guys didn't mention this, I was the only person in the class to mention that the BP has people murdered in the Niger River Delta so that they can keep their profitability over there. And they are doing things there that would never be legal off the coast of England. and the curriculum was going to sugarcoat that. Yeah. They were going to just let that go. That didn't exist. You know? And so I guess I was the only person in the room that listened to Democracy Now, but, you know, I brought that kind of thing up. So even in Japanese business, there's this thinking that, well, you know, the whole world operates, these safety things or these ideas are just naturally occurring things that happen whenever you do business.
No.
And there's no worry about setting that up. So a Japanese company can freely invest in, you know, like Ghana or someplace where Ghana's actually not so bad, but like Liberia, like Firestone, and have everything be horrible because they can't imagine that it would be like that. So yeah, there's a lot of worker protections in Japan, and like even Japanese business people, either they're lying or they really don't know that these kind of things don't exist in other places. Mm-hmm. I mean, some know.
It's weird because
So you get the same kind of ignorance. People, this is indicative of Japanese culture. It's not just Italia where this happens.
Well, it's just like a, you know, how it is here, it is everywhere, or something like that.
Yeah. They talked about GE and Welch and Jeff about how great GE was, and I was the only person to bring up the fact that you still can't swim the Hudson River because of those bastards.
Right.
They were like, really? Oh, I did not know that. Maybe I shouldn't have said the name of the school I go to.
We can alter your voice. Yeah. Oh, I didn't record you on a different track, so it'd be really hard. But
No. No, I'm sure they'd be happy to know this because they're not there for that. You know, they're not there to whitewash anything and rubber stamp graduates and put them out there and have them just gambare. You know, we're there. We're the reason we're there, and the reason this school gets money from the Japanese government is because they have sold the idea that there needs to be fundamental changes. One of the guys who leads a field study over there is the dude who invented the airbag.
Nice.
Invented the thing.
Oh, wow.
He's the one who goes nuts on operation versus innovation. And I've seen him scream at the top of his lungs, stupid, 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 at people who, like, you know, other Japanese salarymen would be bowing before as a god. But this guy's like, you're stupid! So, at least he gets it. But that's what they're really trying to foster over there. And so, Italia's got it, but at least they're going in the right direction. They could have done that. They could have done that about purely domestic history. Get a little Sekigahara going on. I mean, that's been done to death.
But that would not have any international play.
So the fact that they picked that in and of itself.
Well, the fact that one guy who lived in Brooklyn. Right?
Okay. Well, he lived in New York for a while. He was going to school in America or something. But now he's back.
Who was already an internationalist, which it would have never occurred to me that would have such potentially a heavy impact on his choice of subject matter. Just the fact that he got outside the border.
Wait, it wouldn't have occurred to you?
No.
You wouldn't have thought, like, oh.
History's fun. In high school, we did stuff like that.
Oh, with different countries and...
Yeah.
That's the funny thing. Japan history just does not exist.
Well, it now occurs to me that whenever there's a classroom scene in anime, what is it they're doing?
Learning English.
They're learning English. Or sometimes math. Yeah. Little math. Never history.
It's very rare. Mm. Maybe they're reading Japanese literature. That sometimes happens.
Yeah. But I'll say that more than anything else, the history education that I got is useful.
It's also a lot better.
You're on the top of the...
Yeah.
I get it, but that's why I really advocate.
Because no, to like an international baccalaureate program, so it wasn't just... I learned U.S. history a bunch of times for no apparent reason. Like, not for no reason.
You didn't just watch the Discovery Channel a bunch.
No, no. Yeah. Well, surely not. But, we have
an
education
system. You got a real international education system, like, with a program that was not just focused on the country in which you were in.
Yes. And I think that
Easter makes some sort of sense, where every year it seemed like I learned American history, so there are these big gaps where I'm like, alright, so you got Vikings, and then we skip forward, and then some other stuff, skip forward.
That's why I like Vinland Saga, because I love historical.
Yeah, Vinland Saga. So, I don't know, I was reading Historia.
What's that one?
That's, Alexander the Great as told by his secretary, Eumenes.
Nice.
It is a buildings Roman of Eumenes, about which very little is known. But it is very much in the sort of historical style of Vinland Saga.
Oh, so it's not like everybody's moe with bouncing boobs and Alexander the Great is like a schoolgirl.
Hot dudes.
No, they're all kids, yeah. At least initially. I don't know how much moe there is there, but...
What about yaoi? Hot dudes?
Yeah, a little bit of that.
All right.
That's weird, but it's not a fad, but it's a stage, it's a passing stage.
Yeah.
Eventually moe will go away.
Yeah.
Just like Cyberpunk did.
Yeah.
It'll leave its mark, and there'll be something new.
Poor Cyberpunk.
What can you do?
We hardly knew ye.
I know, right? Should we wrap things up?
Man, I hope you got some usable stuff out of this.
Yeah,
you want me to badmouth anybody?
Oh, man.
There's a whole bunch of stuff. I was consulting at a Japanese media company during the Tokyo Anime Festival.
And this year.
The day of the fair was the day my team presented to the CEO, so I could not go. But I can tell you about this place that I was, and it's pretty big company. I mean, they're important. They're in downtown Tokyo. They're in TV land, where all the other TV companies are, except Fuji, which is out on Odaiba. You know, they were, you know, having an issue with the fact that people were subscribing to the service and then unsubscribing to the service and, you know, back and forth. Like, every company has to worry about that.
Right. Company that's very nameless.
But there seemed... Yeah, well, I don't want to make... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can name everybody except them. But, you know, there's... And this is actually true. I've been over to other telecom companies as well. There's no clear connection between program content and subscriber or viewer behavior. And a lot of it seems to be operations oriented, not service oriented. So another example is this Japanese food chain talking about a service change when Starbucks went from manual coffee machines to automatic coffee machines, the machines that would make espresso.
Yeah.
And they call that a service change. But here's the thing. The customers didn't notice.
Yeah.
So it's not a change in service. If the barista saves an extra 5 seconds, that's your operations change right there.
It does sound like an operations change.
Yeah. But the fact that that is thought of as service, the intangible part of business, the intangible value, which manga and anime need a lot of.
Yeah.
It's a lot of that is intangible. There is a missing. They're missing the target of where their efforts need to go. And you can't explain that. You have to experience that. So if you start with two people that have different, very different concepts in their mind, that's two different kinds of tacit knowledge.
Yeah.
You force them to make it explicit so that they can explain it to each other.
Yeah.
But that has to be linked with an activity that they both experience at the same time. So then that experience will become the context in which the next level of tacit knowledge matches up. So if you and I both have the same context, we can understand the same tacit knowledge, you know, without having to be explicit with each other. Right? If we don't have the same context, then me trying to explain something without words or explain something intangible to you, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Because it's different context.
Right.
So first, I got to make that explicit. Then we have to share a context. Then it becomes tacit again, but at least this time we have the same context, so that's how we understand it.
So is it like if you were giving a lecture to a class about film, and you were like, all right, here's what happens in this film, and I just describe it to you, like, that's one thing, but then if we both watch the film together, now we both share this experience of watching the film, and then we can have this shared context of when I explain it again, it makes
sense. Yeah, and then when you explain it, you're gonna come up with people who have had different experiences, and you're gonna talk about why you see different things about it, and then that experience is gonna give new context, and it keeps going in this concentric outward growing spiral. This is called the SECI model. I did not think of this.
Oh.
this is textbook stuff. SECI model. SECI. Dr. Ikujiro Nonaka came up with this, but it's definitely there needs to be a little bit of that in terms of making these companies realize where customers get the value from anime, and what value do the companies put into it.
Right.
Is the line, making the line extra sharp, is that really going to, you know,
make it? Yeah, it's not easily described. Yeah. Like, putting that extra glow effect on there, does that...
Or making the story better. Or making another episode.
Yeah.
Or no more filler.
Right.
I mean, those are obvious ones. But, you know, so it needs a lot of that, and that's not happening.
Because it's really intangible to be like, well, fans really like this anime better because it was made with more heart. Like, you can't... It's so hard to, like, quantify that.
Yeah.
And
because there's no shared context about what that means, you and I think something totally different.
Right.
So I need to fix
different
that.
Ideas. Yeah. You're, like, shaking your head.
The same could be true for Hollywood, except they make lots and lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
It's true.
Whoa.
Oh. So you got how much more left at school?
Oh, God.
In a couple months?
What is it? It's the end of May now, end of August. Maybe we finished this up. And then I got to figure out how to get a sweet job.
In Japan or in America?
No, I don't want
to. You're like, no.
All the problems I just described, I don't want to have to be the one to fix them.
Maybe being on the ground floor and the flux.
Yeah, no.
That's later.
That'd be nice, but I've been there for a while, and I really would like a few years at a Japanese company in the U.S. Maybe nice.
Yeah.
How's your Japanese skills?
I don't know, that's why I'm kind of mad Ed's not around.
Oh, because you're going to speak Japanese? I took months of courses after I last saw you, which was like, last March or something?
Yeah, how'd yesterday's class go?
どこに授業して?
Japan Society.
Japan Society. 勉強して、授業を、すれば、じゃあ、日本語を、じゃあ、どちら使うつもりか。
Oh, crap. Wait, start.
Where do you plan on using... Because you're taking Japanese class, right? Where do you plan on using your Japanese?
漫画を読みます
。Well, you don't need to take a class to do that. Just start doing that now.
No, the class really helped.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, actually, that was my thing. Because I bought that one yo-yo manga that's by that Yakitaki Japan guy. And I tried to read it just having learned what I had learned before, like maybe last year or something. And then the new classes I took, and I just started reading it again, I can go a lot faster.
That's good.
I understand a lot more of it.
Practice makes perfect.
Yeah, and even if I don't understand what's going on, I'm like, oh, well, now I know that this grammar ending means they want something. All right.
Us business students are actually forbidden from taking Japanese courses.
Oh,
when we're taking business courses, because they don't want any conflict from what we're there for.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, you want to take Japanese courses? Fine. Not when your session happens.
Right.
So this one week I could have done this or taken a Japanese course. Or I could wait till it's over or whatever. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, kids, going and living in Japan, don't do that.
Don't do that.
it's not what you think it is. It's not a 24-hour anime convention. It's not fun. It's not your city full of Japanese people. It's not...
unless you go to Osaka.
Yeah, Osaka's better.
It's okay.
Don't go to Tokyo.
Osaka's much. Well, everybody goes to Tokyo because they have to, but in terms of like what Japan really is, if you're going to go there for vacation or to have, you know, a good experience, Tokyo does not have much to offer. There's not a lot of historical sites. There's even not a lot of museums that have Japanese stuff. It's all about like their Renaissance collection in Tokyo.
Like the Parasitological Museum.
Yeah.
The best museum.
Well, that is the Parasite Museum and the Sox Museum.
All right.
The Edo Museum is pretty much the only thing that's really Japanese-centric.
Oh, yeah.
But if you want to experience Japan...
Yeah. Edo?
Edo.
As in, Edo?
Nice try.
Oh.
Hey?
You want to... Yeah, I know. That's my neighborhood. I'll take you in. But no, I would recommend going to Osaka, Hiroshima, Nagoya,
Kyoto,
and definitely Kyoto.
Yeah. If you like museums, so
and Sapporo,
much.
But
for the brewery,
yeah, for the brewery, but don't go look at that clock.
Well, you know, there's a
overrated.
There's a Kirin brewery in Yokohama.
Ah,
that's much closer, and you can hit the ramen museum the same day.
That's a delicious
hell of a day. All right.
90.3 KEXP. You just heard Black Daisy with The Dragon.